Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
What we do.
Here's John Williams.
That's me. How are you? It's 108. We're in the Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. Where are you? Kind of cloudy downtown.
Lord have mercy.
Still, temperatures in the 60s this week. How about them apples? We're here weekdays 1 to 3. I'll be on my Saturday show this week, 10 a.m. till 12 noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record here at the studios at WGN, judged by the Illinois Broadcasters Association this year, best in the state. We may turn the one we did in today for next year's competition. The kids were kind of wound up. The Mincing Rascals feature Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, WGN Radio Steve Bertrand, Justin Kaufman was in the mix today. Lisa Donovan was in there. Who else was in there? I guess that was the lineup. And we talked about this Chicago teacher strike. 25,000 teachers on strike. Park District will probably is not participating, right? But the teachers are, and a few hundred thousand families and kids are all kind of scrambling, trying to figure out what to do today. I said that this is the strike that it looked like the union wanted. And then the gang just went off, and Justin was more, I think, on the side of the teachers than the rest of the room was, but it was a spirited conversation.
I've never seen Justin. I didn't know he could be so angry.
He was about ready to reach over and pop you in the nose. In fact, it seems to me like, Steve, whenever the Rascals get right to the brink, you're one of the people that's right there at the brink.
Well, I don't know why that would be, because I'm pretty mild-mannered.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
But, you know, being mild-mannered, you can still be antagonistic. I would consider it a talent if I were you.
Sometimes you need to know where to poke.
A special gift. Yeah, no kidding. Well, he's got, but I think Justin maybe speaks about it a little more intimately than the rest of us do. He has a kid in the Chicago Public Schools, and I don't. And I'll tell you something else.
And I don't think he was really angry. I'm kidding around.
No, I am kidding around a little bit. But, we're all friends. We just come at some of these topics differently. And he comes at it a little more intimately than I do. You know, here's my problem with my filter. And by the way, Janis Jackson, the president of the Chicago Public Schools, the CEO, is going to join us after 1:30. And the Chicago Teachers Union has just cut a commercial that you'll hear on WGN Radio and throughout Chicagoland, I guess, starting tomorrow. And, you know, don't you hate it when you hear an ad and it's very one-sided and you go, okay, what's going on? What's the truth of that? Well, we're going to be able to get in front of this because we already have the commercial here. We'll play excerpts from it for Janis Jackson to let her respond. What is your answer to these charges from the schools? I'm not real optimistic that this thing is going to get done in a big hurry here. But we've talked to both sides on and off the air. A lot more off the air than on the air. And it sounds like they're kind of dug in. My problem with this, though, has been, I think, as an employee. Is that you, Steve, or is that somebody else? I think that might be the sports office. I'll turn that off.
You know what? It was me. I'm sorry.
It's all good. So my problem is, I think, just as an employee, as a teacher, I think I would be looking at this as, well, what's in it for me? I've got to pay my bills. I want to feed my kids. And if you're going to get somewhere around $100,000, not that that's getting you rich, but that's the number that they keep saying, 16% over 5 years, the average teacher will be making about $100,000. I think that's pretty good. that's not a school district not bargaining in good faith. That's them giving you a lot of money. On the union's website, they have a math teacher in front of a whiteboard, and he explains how that's not exactly true. He said, if you take the average teacher right now who has been here for, I think it's 6 years, and you say, give them that raise over the next 5 years, that gets them to $97,500 or something. He said, but in 5 years, the average teacher will not have been here 11, that is, If you're here for six, the average teacher right now has been there for six. You say, okay, in 5 years, the average teacher will be here for 11. No, in 5 years, the average teacher will still have been there for six because it's the average teacher. Attrition, people quitting, moving on to other jobs, whatever. The average teacher today has been on the job for 5 years. The average teacher last year had been on the job for 5 years. And in 5 years, the average teacher will have been on the job for, I said five, but six. The average teacher's on the job for 6 years. So when the public schools calculate the raise, they say, now, what would your pay grade be at 11 years of salary? And they say, well, that's kind of, okay, that's an interesting number, but it's not relevant to what we're talking about. The average teacher won't be making about $100,000 at the end of this contract because the average teacher will not have been here for 11 years. The average teacher's on the job for about six.
But the teachers going on strike will.
If they all stay in, but on average, enough of them will, right, some of them will be making that money if they stick it out. But I don't know, Steve, it seems to me to be a fair point by the teachers' union that we won't, on average, be making $100,000. We'll be making about $87,000. Still good coin, but if we just want to, you know, put the numbers in sort of a reasonable perspective, to say the average teacher will make him $100,000 is not going to be true in 6 years. I don't know. Maybe that's a small point. but I always look at it that way, right? Because I think we all do. That's your first obligation to yourself and your family is to do what's best for you. And then the teachers say, well, this is about the students. I walked by one of the striking schools today and saw the teachers holding their signs. And they said, you know, we're walking out for the students. And this is another point that was brought up in the Mincing Rascals podcast. I think Eric Zorn made it pretty well. And again, you'll be able to hear all of this conversation starting at 5 o'clock this evening when we drop the pod. You know, we talk about Donald Trump, too. We never got around to chickens in the backyards of Chicagoans. But Zorn said that the things that the teachers are ostensibly striking for, the quality of life in the school for the students, counselors, nurses, librarians, aides, those are good causes. But it's not realistic to expect them to be accomplished in this contract. We just can't get it done. So we're on your side in theory, but I wouldn't walk off for that because that's not going to happen. We'll see what the Janice Jackson says. The CTU has all but assured us that they will join us after Janice Jackson comes on. So that'll be sometime between 1:30 and 3. Tell your friends to be listening for that and that little commercial. One other story that you heard in the news, I'm not going to take the time to dwell on it here. If we get rolling on this, we won't get back to that. But as you've just heard, Mick Mulvaney, who does not generally stand before the White House press corps, nobody does anymore, just the president does. But he announced that the 2020, the next G7 summit, is going to be held. We knew in the United States, the question was where. They sent a committee out. They looked at 10 or 12 places in Utah, in Hawaii, all around the country. And they've decided that the perfect place is Trump National Resort in Doral, Florida.
Isn't that like putting Dick Cheney in charge of the vice presidential hunt?
I was just thinking of that.
I don't know how he can do that, though. I mean, this is a administration of breaking the norms, but I don't know how. That's just kind of, it's just really surprising to me that he can do that.
Either surprising or not surprising at all.
Well, it's not surprising that he's going to do it, but I guess because this clearly is a government decision he's making.
You think this is an emoluments thing?
Well, it's certainly he's going to make money off of it.
Okay, Elif, can we play what Mulvaney said before the assembled press? I've always liked Mulvaney. It seems to me like he was a reasonable and sensible guy. But, you know, this is his job. He's working for the president. So maybe someday he'll write his book and it will sound different than this, but maybe it won't. This is where he brought up this announcement and what the reaction was from the press.
We're going to announce today that we're going to do the 46th G7 summit on June 10th through June 12th at the Trump National Doral facility in Miami, Florida.
So how is this not just an enormous conflict of interest for the president to host the G7 at his own resort? And how will the president continue to criticize the Biden family for self-dealing at the same time he's doing this?
Okay, a couple different things. First off, you're not making any profit. I think we've already established that. I think some
marketing and branding opportunity.
It's a huge. I've heard that before. I guess I've been the chief now for about 9 or 10 months, and I always hear it whenever we go to Mar-a-Lago, it's a huge branding opportunity. Whenever he plays, at Trump Mar-a-Lago, we play golf at Trump Bedminster. He goes to play golf at Trump up in Sterling, and everybody asks the question, is it not a huge marketing opportunity? I would simply ask you all to consider the possibility that Donald Trump's brand is probably strong enough as it is, and he doesn't need any more help on that. This is not like it's the most recognizable name in the English language and probably around the world right now. So no, that has nothing to do with it. That's why I was skeptical. I was aware of the political sort of criticism that we come under for doing it at Doral, which is why I was so surprised when the advanced team called back and said that this is the perfect physical location to do this. So I get the criticisms. So does he. Face it, he'd be criticized regardless of what he chose to do. But no, there's no issue here on him profiting from this in any way, shape, or form. What's the difference between this and what we're talking about, the Bidens? First of all, there's no profit here. Clearly, there's profit to the Bidens. And second of all, I think if there's one difference as you look at between the Trump family and the Biden family, Trump family made their money before they went into politics.
It's Mick Mulvaney's response to all of that. I don't know what he means by there's no profit here. I'm not exactly sure what he means by that. It would seem to me that if you book rooms at the resort, maybe they would have otherwise been booked. Maybe they're giving him at a discount. Maybe the brand is so strong, the additional publicity really doesn't help them.
Did he say that they're going to not? I mean, they're going to pay for the rooms, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how he says there's no profit motive here, but at least that's the administration's response. It's 1:20 now on WGN. Oh, by the way, just one other thing, Steve. Remember yesterday we were talking about using fake IDs when you were a kid? And how kids do or don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And I believe it was you who made a point that maybe I didn't sufficiently acknowledge, because sometimes you and I talk against each other and I don't always pause and listen to the good things you say. But wasn't it you that was saying that you don't think kids drive as irresponsibly today as they used to?
Right, I don't. I think the attitude has changed quite a bit.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right about that. And I suppose that was the experience with your kids, and it sure was the experience with mine, too, that my one son didn't drink until he was close to drinking age. The other one started earlier. I'll never forget, he came home one day. He literally came into the room and said, "Dad, I had beer." And then in his defense, he sort of holds up his hands and he says, "But I did not like it." And I said, "Well, no one likes it the first time or two. That's not why we didn't tell you to drink beer, not because we don't think you would like it, but because you're not supposed to and because you'll get in trouble and the consequences can be dire." So that's why that you didn't like it is not going to get you out of jail on this one. But we weren't, stupid. We figured that someday this would happen and we sort of appreciated his coming clean on it. But it was my experience with my kids and their friends that when they were drinking underage, they weren't driving. They would have a designated driver. They would, Uber when they were in college. It just was a different mindset. And so maybe I don't know how that relates to kids with fake IDs, because you still need a fake ID to get alcohol when you're underage, say. But it does seem as though they sure do handle it differently. All right, it's 1:21 on WGN. A text has just poured in. How can they say there will be no profit at Doral? I don't know. I'm just playing you the clip, and that's what the man said. It's 1:21 on WGN. My number is 312-981-7200. And Janice Jackson, the CEO of the Chicago Public Schools, will join us after the 1:30 news. That's in 8 minutes. And among other things, we'll play for her the brand new commercial that the CTU is going to be running. I'm not all excited about a commercial on the radio. I'm just saying this is the CTU today saying these are our talking points. We'll let her respond. That's coming up. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. Listen, I understand you're getting a lot of texts about how could he not profit, so on and so forth. You guys are walking down that trap again.
What happened?
There's numerous ways in which he can do it. One, he gets a $450,000 a year salary that he's not allowed to donate to charity, but he can throw back to the agencies his salary. He's done that since he's been president. So what he's going to do is wait for you guys to bury yourselves and having so much conversation about he's profiting, he's going to do something like that, or he's going to do it at cost. If he does it at cost, guess what he's doing? He's employing people. If rooms are not filled, people don't work. If people have rooms to fill, then those individuals work. Restaurants, so on and so forth. You watch and see what he does. He's going to embarrass the whole lot of you again. What you should be talking about is that he just did it. And I'm not a Trump supporter.
No, you don't sound like one.
I'm sorry. I'm just being realistic. The guy just did it again with the ceasefire. They were going to try and use that Syria thing as a form of impeachment, and it blew up in their face. He's got now their cooperation in fighting ISIS as well. He waits for you to walk down that path, bury yourself, and then says, look, he's doing it again. I'm sorry, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I can recognize what the man's doing.
Well, the one thing about the Syria thing is it's not a ceasefire to where they're going to sort of negotiate some sort of settlement. This is a ceasefire to allow the Kurds to flee. I mean, that's the Kurds weren't engaged in this agreement. This is just that they're going to stop shooting long enough to give the Kurds time to get out of where the Turks want them to get out of.
I'm thinking about the Doral Club. If they had the G7 somewhere else, somebody else would be employed there. I mean, wherever that is, Americans will be paid and pay taxes. So it's sort of neutral on that point. But is he going to do it at cost or at a discount? I don't know. And I don't even think that's the main point. Mulvaney said that there's no profit motive here. And I don't know exactly what that means. But it sure seems to me like it is classic Trump, though, right? If you are critical of, say, emoluments or the way the president uses his presidency to help his family and help his brand, rather than distance himself from it, he always doubles down. It's exactly what he did with the Ukraine call. It's what he did in Syria. He always doubles down. There is consistency there. It's 128. Steve Bertrand's in the newsroom. The news, then Janis Jackson are next.
Well, I wish I had better news. I think we still have a lot of areas that we need to settle on.
As yesterday's show, Janis Jackson, you may recognize the voice, Chicago CEO, joining us. And if the tone in her voice was pessimistic, so too is the truth today. They're out. Janis Jackson is back on a phone line to talk to us today, the first day of the strike, about how things are going. Welcome back, Mrs. Jackson. We appreciate you joining us. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
What's the status of talks right now?
Well, as you know, the strike started this morning, and we were back at the bargaining table with CTU for a few hours. Those talks did have to take a break because the teachers are having a rally this afternoon. But we did start back this morning, and I know on our side we're continuing to push for a sense of urgency so that we can reach a deal, especially since we're at a point where students are out of class. And so we've been spending most of our time today back at headquarters, making sure that our contingency plan is in place to greet the students that showed up today. We had about 7,000 students come to school today, and we wanted to make sure that they were safe and knew that the district was prepared to greet them and make sure they had everything they needed during this time. But we'll be back at the table this afternoon with CTU and hope to get a deal done and get these things resolved as quickly as possible.
Can you tell me about the mechanics of that? Is it 40 of them on one side of a table? Are you all in different rooms? What's that look like?
So just to give you a high-level overview, we have what's called a table team, which looks like a pretty traditional labor negotiation setup with folks from Chicago Public Schools, all of whom are educators or former teachers, which I think is critically important. That has never been the case during contract negotiations with CPS and CTU. And then, of course, there are lawyers for both CTU and Chicago Public Schools present. What is unique about the way in which we bargain with our partners at CTU is that they do have a big bargaining committee made up of 40 teachers who represent schools throughout the city. And we discuss things at the table. They take different topics back to caucus over and try to reach resolutions. And so that extra step of working with the bargaining team and getting their approval is a mechanic that's in place based on how CTU is organized.
Are you in that room?
Oh, no, I have not started negotiations during this cycle. I did participate in 2016 when I was in the role of chief education officer. The mayor and I have both said we're happy to negotiate. We've been anxious to get to the table, but we have to come to the table when we actually have a substantive proposal and response back from CTU. I know for a lot of listeners it's hard to kind of get through all of the information that's being talked about, but essentially where we are is CTU gave us a full proposal in January that would cost the city $2.5 billion. And throughout negotiations, whether the pace was fast or slow, they have not come off any of those. And so what we're trying to do now that we have gotten to this point, is really try to figure out what are the real issues that have them out of class that we can resolve. We know it's not compensation because we haven't heard a lot about compensation in the past few weeks at the bargaining table. It's been widely reported that the mayor's offer is generous. It's in line with what the neutral fact finder that CTU and CPS agreed to use had stated was
right.
important.
Right.
And so we're just trying to get to the bottom of what it's going to take to actually bring our kids back to class.
The CTU has a commercial that's going to start running throughout Chicago. It'll be on this radio station, maybe at this time tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play for you a couple of the clips from the ad because I think it articulates their position on what you just said. What are the sticking
okay.
points? Here's the first part of that commercial.
When she was running for mayor, Lori Lightfoot promised to do more for our kids and our schools. But her campaign promises don't mean a thing unless she tells Chicago Public Schools to make good on them. Like fully staffing schools with nurses, librarians, and counselors. Creating safe and welcoming learning environments.
You told us yesterday a little bit about that. You said
mm-hmm.
that if we agree to that in writing, since there's not enough people in the pipeline, we'll immediately be in violation of the contract. Is that your position on it?
That's our position. Let's take a step back. The mayor has said and has already put in motion a plan to do exactly what was played in that clip. Even before we got to the point where we were negotiating in earnest, the mayor talked to parents, teachers, students, and principals throughout the city and heard the importance of social workers in these key positions in schools. And in our operating budget, we added those positions to the operating budget this year and have been working. We added 90 positions. And we've been working to staff those positions. There is a pipeline issue that is conveniently not talked about. And so what we want to better understand is how do we create a plan that has those goals identified, those shared goals that we both have, but are also responsible. We can't promise that we're going to do something that we know is going to be challenging and require time and creativity
right,
without
right.
documenting that in the contract or documenting that in writing in some way. And that's what we've been trying to do, but the union has not moved off its original position from January, which is to add all of these in the contract.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I know their frustration with what you just said is that the way the Chicago schools let those contracts, the way they actually try and hire those, is late enough in some hiring cycle that a lot of the people that would qualify for those positions have found employment elsewhere. You need to sort of change the way you actually try and fill those spots. Does that make any sense?
Well, that is not the issue here. In fact, in the past 2 years, CPS has released its budget early, or I would say earlier than it had in the past, which is right in line so that we can hire competitively. Principals know their budgets in March, and they can start the hiring process, so it lines up perfectly when folks are completing school. The fact of the matter is, if you look, you can go and do a search on your own through the ISBE's website, the State of Illinois, the State Board of Education's website, and see how many certified nurses that are unemployed reside in Illinois. the numbers don't match. You can do that same search for social workers who have the school licensure. So these are real issues that could immediately be looked at. I would much rather prefer, instead of going back and forth around the challenges around the pipeline, to really sit down, roll up our sleeves, and figure out a plan that is aggressive as it needs to be, a plan that prioritizes the schools that need it the most on the south and west side, like we've done with the new positions that we've added. And we just haven't gotten that sense of urgency from the union.
What about
today? Go ahead.
If I may, I just wanted to play for you another clip. Is that all right?
Okay.
Here's another thing that they're going to be saying all around Chicagoland tomorrow.
And lowering class size at every grade level. Other cities across America have made it happen. Let's do it here in Chicago.
You and I did not talk about that yesterday. Mm-hmm. Can you put in writing that we'll limit the classroom size by a certain student count?
What we are prepared to put in writing is to go beyond what's already in our contract to account for class size. Let's get a clear understanding of what the class size issue is. The first fact is that it is not the 1970s where we have these images of 40 kids in a classroom all across the city. Everyone knows that we're losing enrollment dramatically in Chicago, in particular on the south and the west side. So the very communities where they're claiming this overcrowding is rampant, it's not true. We do, however, have some communities that are growing and some communities where, because of Chicago Public School success, more families are choosing to send their kids to CPS as opposed to their neighborhood Catholic schools, etc. If you live in a community that happens to have 38 first graders or some number like that, we can't just tell those eight students over that number, you can't attend this school. What we have offered in writing is to make sure that we provide a teacher's assistant in that classroom in cases where that has happened. We've also put in writing that we would work with our principals to make sure that they're not over-enrolling those schools and classrooms with students who don't reside in those boundaries. So again, we put in writing what we think are solutions to this, and we're just waiting for a response that we don't get through the media, that we don't get through commercials, that we actually get in writing back from the union that is very different than the proposal, the only official proposal that we have on the table, which is what they gave us back in January.
This is the third clip of three I'll play for you. This is, again, another part of the CTU commercial starting tomorrow. Go ahead.
We have the funding. The state gave us an additional $1 billion for public education.
I've heard about that on and off the air. Didn't the state say, here's $1 billion? Where's that $1 billion?
Well, first of all, that's misleading, and the union knows that. The first year when we received additional funding from the state, which we're very happy we received because we were on the brink of financial insolvency, $700 billion with a B, went into the teachers' pension fund, a fund that I happen to be a part of and which I believe needs to be funded. But because of that lack of funding, $700 billion went there to account for underfunding from previous years and to try to get us back on track. The additional funds, it's all documented in our budget. We went from a district where we were cutting budgets and into putting new dollars into our schools. We put $31 million in equity grants. We put more money in bilingual education. We put close to $30 million in special education, close to $100 million in early childhood education. And so this fantasy that this money somehow came and went into a black hole just doesn't make sense. And then the last point that I will lift up is CPS is still a district where we are managing our finances carefully. We borrow $700 million a year in order to operate our budget. That would be the same as a family, saying that a family that is surviving by spending money on a credit card every month in order to survive is somehow flush with cash to pay for all of the things that they are proposing. And so while the union has said money isn't an issue, so it's curious to me that this is now becoming more of an issue. I think it's a red herring, and we really got to get back to the things that matter, which is making sure they have a contract that respects the work that they do. And I think we led with that with a generous raise in health care contributions, and also making sure if there are true quality of life issues that need to be addressed, that we have a proposal that is responsible and respectful and fair so we can get a deal done. And I am looking forward to getting that. And I would love to be at the table along with the mayor to settle that contract right. Once we get a response from them.
You and I have less than 30 seconds left. Will there be the Chicago Tribune, I believe, in their editorial said that once the strike starts, then it's a reset on the negotiation. Are you going to keep with all of the proposals that you've made, all of the offers, or exists the possibility that you'll pull back on some of these offers?
Where we are, we think we have a fair contract and proposal on the table that we hope the union will respond to. We can't comment on where the district is going to go. We think that we put something out there that's fair. The union has to come back to us and tell us what matters. If they believe that the compensation package that we have is, it doesn't matter as much as having a nurse in a school or some of these other things that they're talking about, we're happy to have that conversation with
them.
We just haven't had it.
Yeah, but that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Do you want to trade some of your raise for some nurses and aides? I mean, has that been discussed?
We have not had that discussion yet.
Finally, do you know what time the contract negotiations, you said they'll get back in there this afternoon. Do you know when they're actually going to sit down?
Yeah, we're looking at late this afternoon. I know that the rally just started around 1:30, so it'll probably be a couple of hours, and our team is just in a recess of sorts, so just waiting for CTU leadership to return. So we're anticipating a couple of hours.
Janice Jackson, thank you for your time again.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Maybe we'll talk again tomorrow or the next day, hopefully soon on better terms. Speaking of teacher strike, Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune. It's 1:51 now. This is WGN. John Williams, hope you're having a good day. You know, if I was a kid and the schools went on strike, I think I'd be pretty okay with that. I mean, it must feel in some respects to the students like a snow day, or maybe not. But I mean, you know, all of a sudden, hey, I don't have to go to school today. I don't have to have that test. I'm not going to turn in my book report today. Whatever it is that you got to do at school. Most kids, when I woke up, didn't want to go to school. If they'd said to me at Manuka Community High School some time ago, hey, the teachers aren't showing up, you can go back to bed, or you don't have to go to school today, I would have been okay with that. But I would not have liked it if they had canceled my game, because I was, as you may know, a very successful field goal kicker for the Manuka Community High School Indians. And so I'd want to go to practice. I want to go to the game. Same with track, same with baseball, basketball, football, whatever your sport was. Most of the kids want to play their sports, but they can't during a strike. It's funny. Zorn pointed out in his column this week that there are rules about that. And if the Illinois State High School Association and the school district agree, then the kids can play. But the way it's set up now, mostly they can't. I don't know how you feel about that. If the two schools are going to play this weekend, if they're going to play tonight, should they be able to play? I say yeah. Now, you would have to get some of the teachers who are coaches to work, if you will. They get a stipend additional to their salary, but it's not that much, and somebody could pay that. The union could. The coaches could work for free, or the school could pay them. The union and the school district could say, all right, the coach gets an extra few $1,000s a year. That's so many dollars a game, so he can have another couple $100 for the game tonight. I mean, they could do that. They could do whatever they want. I don't think the students are physically in jeopardy if they play the football game while the teachers are on strike. Now, maybe that looks like the teacher coaches are crossing the picket line, but I think we're all smart enough to see it is what it is. Those aren't disloyal teachers. Those are coaches who've been working with the kids since August. If I was a football player, were you a football player? You had to do two-a-days in the summer. You're sweating and you're running around and you're giving up all your fun time and you are getting ready for a football season so you can play on a Friday or a Thursday or a Saturday in the fall, the best time of year, and then the teachers go on strike? That's not on you. That's not even on your coach. I'd let him play. Hey, Frank, you're on WGN. What'd you want to say?
Hey, John, there's some kids who are old enough that they may be able to stay home from school, and they might say, hip, hip, hooray. But if you're younger, you might get sent off to grandma's, or you might get sent off to the neighbor's house, where they probably were better off hoping that they would have gone to school instead.
Yeah, it's true. I was thinking about it as a kid who could have stayed home.
But, John, question, like, you know, it's funny that when the Cubs go to the playoffs or if they're in the World Series, the city doesn't hesitate to drop $1 million on overtime for police to police the city and keep our city safe. But it seems like every time these contracts are near expiring, that it always comes down the wire to scrounge for pennies to pay the educators that are taking care of our children that are supposed to be the stage for our future in society.
It's well put, Frank. Yep, I don't like where we are either. I'll tell you what, it's funny because Janice, thanks for the phone call. Janice is on here and then she makes her point. And then you play the commercial for the teachers and then they make a point. And then she comes back and she makes a point. They're going to come on our show before 3 and they're going to make a point that'll counter what she just told you. I don't know what the ultimate resolution of this is. 815 texted in and said, as a former teacher, 38 kids in the classroom with an aide is still too many, Miss Jackson. That's what she said. If, you know, there's more than 38, we've put in writing that we'll go ahead and put an aide in there. I think a lot of you are doing the math I was doing. If there's 38 kids in the classroom, how about we have 2 19-student classrooms? That doesn't seem to be on the board, nor does asking the teachers to take less. I haven't heard the union. I'll have to ask the union that. How about you all take a little less and fund some of these positions yourself? I'm sure they'll have an informed thing to say about that, but I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It's 1:56 on WGN. John Williams here with maybe the union afterwards. They said they'd try and get into the conversation today. We haven't heard from them yet. What was it? Elif was on the red line. She takes the red line. I take the red line too. Both of us, on occasion, are on a red line train that has a pretty chatty conductor, a really funny conductor, a guy who is at every stop saying stuff to everybody and making jokes and thanking them for coming on. He's sort of like the Southwest Airlines flight attendants before you take off. I've not been a big fan of the Southwest Airlines funny flight attendants. I don't know how you feel about these people if you are on one of the trains or buses where the guy's real chatty. You know, you just want to get where you're going. You got your head down. You're trying to listen to your iPod or read your book. We went on Reddit and found a thread that has a whole bunch of things that the conductors do say. It's pretty funny. I'll share some of that with you after the news, and you can too. Coming up on WGN.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Still,
here's John Williams.
Mission accomplished. Your job is to get in Steve's crop.
I was going to say, how was that mission accomplished?
That's all I wanted to do. That's all I wanted to do. We're here till 3. I'll be on Saturday from 10 to noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. And later in this hour, Mincing Rascals podcast, wherever you hear your finer podcast, you can say to your smart speaker, play the Mincing Rascals podcast. There we will be. I mentioned in the Mincing Rascals today, we recorded it. We'll drop it around 5 this evening that we're going to just stick on a bonus track at the end. It'll be some of the audio from our conversation with Teddy Roosevelt, 26th president, was on stage with me at the Elgin Community College Saturday. It was really fun. I'll play some of that just so you can kind of get the feel for it. If you've heard it before, you'll love it. And if you've never, you'll finally get a chance to see what that thing was all about. We'll put that at the end of the Mincing Rascals podcast. By the way, Steve, I know you're busy. And Lauren, you're kind of you have a mind for sports.
Mm-hmm.
When I get to be king, I'm going to put you in charge of prep sports when there's a strike. Will the games be played or should the games not be played?
I would say they should be played.
I'm with you on that.
No, they should not be played.
And that's why we have a talk show.
I mean, come on. It's just sports. It's just a game that's part of it. And then have to bring staff in. And sadly, sometimes that has an impetus to actually settle.
I know.
That's... Maybe we can have volunteers, parents volunteering to step in.
I know. If it's like somebody to tear the tickets. I know plenty of dads who can coach better than the coach does.
Are you kidding me? John learned this week that you got to have 2 master's degrees to pull a book from the library.
I know.
Right?
It's true. So I think if you... If all you wanted to do was let the kids play, forget about the impact it has on the negotiation. I get your point, Steve. But I really think you need to think for a minute about those kids and their families who have worked all year long. if this were your son or daughter's senior year of soccer, and they're not playing the big game this weekend or tonight because the damn teachers, are you kidding me? They don't get a do-over. The teachers will always get to go back, and they'll be teaching again someday. Your senior season's gone. The big game is over. Why? Well, because the teachers went on strike. Gah! I am not overstating the importance of sports, but I think it's really important.
I think you are overstating it, but
I think it's really important. I think you can have both thoughts. Education, all that stuff, more important. Sports, yeah, way important. Super-duper important.
If you're a senior and you possibly might lose out on all your football games for the final season, that would be kind of a bummer.
They've already played a lot of the season, but I think football season's a pretty short season.
Exactly, yeah.
And the girls are playing soccer now, aren't they? Women's, I think, play soccer in the fall. I'm not that up on that per se. But I don't see the harm in it.
No, I think soccer's in the spring.
Yeah, that's in the spring. Then what do the ladies play in the fall? What is the fall?
Well, some have lacrosse, but yeah. I don't know how widespread that is.
In the city, maybe. It's big in the North Shore and in the suburbs. But
volleyball.
Volleyball. By the way, I saw a list of, I'm gonna continue to make my point, and eventually I'll beat you into submission with this. I saw a list, though, today or yesterday of the sports ranked in order of concussions for student athletes. Men and women. What's the number one sport for concussions in high school? Anybody want to guess? Concussions in high school. Number one?
Basketball.
Football is number one. Good.
Sorry.
Number two? Soccer. Girls' soccer. Women's soccer is the number two sport for incidents of concussions.
Yeah, you use your head a lot in that one, actually.
Is it that they're doing headers with the ball or that the two girls are jumping up in the air and colliding and their heads knock into each other? Maybe both.
Yeah, probably both.
Yeah. But I'm just feeling it for those kids and their parents and the fans. Isn't that one of the great things? It's this beautiful fall day, and we're going to have a nice weekend, and we're not going to play football, some of these great rivalries, because the teachers are on strike. How does the students playing change anything?
So, I mean, we're in such different places because your son was a high school athlete and then became a college athlete. Right, so you're one of the very few. My kids didn't. Noah went to state a couple times in gymnastics, so he was, you know, pretty good.
Hello.
But I think sports gets way too much emphasis.
Well, isn't that kind of up to the athlete on how important it truly is?
I don't know. There's a guy in the air right now who wants to subvert or avert the strike so that people can play football on Friday.
No, I agree.
He didn't say that. No.
That's kind of crazy, but I don't think it's fair to say that we're overstating the importance of sports when that's really just a personal opinion of an athlete or a person.
Well, are we all talking about the same guy? Because I think I'm saying it would be great if the kids got to play. I didn't say that this should influence the
No, I'm sorry. I misspoke
vote.
There. John, let me tell you what you're saying. Here's what you're saying.
You. I didn't know that's what I meant. Hey, teachers, you go on strike for the rest of your lives. That's not my point. My point is these kids have worked since it was 95 degrees in August to get ready to play these games on cool October nights. And if they don't get to, I think that's a shame. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines, and if you agree with me, we'll put you on the air. And you're on WGN. Hello.
Hello. How come it's just sports?
Say it again.
What about the band?
Yeah.
How come it's just sports?
Hey,
get to play?
My nephew's in band, and they don't get to march on Saturday if the strike is on.
But they get to play football, but the band who works in summer and practices in the heat doesn't get to play, or the orchestra people or the students who are in choral don't get to go to their choral competitions because of the strike. Why is it just sports?
Okay, fine. I picked
up. Why are they the ones?
Thank you. But I think you and I are in agreement then. I was thinking of the football games, but as far as I'm concerned, the band should be able to play, and the chorus should be able to sing, and the mathletes should be able to do mathematics. I did oral proofs on the math team. Okay, let's pick up more phone lines. Brian, you're on WGN. Hi, Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I'm from a very small town in another state, and teachers didn't go on strike, but I was very good at football in my sophomore and junior years in school. If they had stricken this time, I would have missed my last game of my senior year and possibly messed up my chance of being all-conference or getting any notice from colleges, have a college scholarship, all because my teachers wanted to go on strike.
Yeah. That's I actually saw that notice in the paper today that this actually is going to impact some bubble athletes. The scouts want to come out and look at them, and if they don't get a chance to see them, maybe the kid doesn't get the chance to play.
Well, thank you, Steve. I thought that same way ever since the teachers wanted to go on strike.
How about and that? That was one of your first thoughts.
Any teachers I had in high school, my parents made more money than they did. If the teachers had gone on strike now, they make more money than my parents do.
Yeah. All right. Listen, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you listening to both the Steve Bertrand Show and me, John Williams. John is on line 4. Hey, John, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hey, Ro.
That's pretty good. They're doing a better show at home. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I was a former social worker. And for kids in the city that especially come from economically challenged areas, even more important. And gives them options that, again, you know, just healthy activities and everything else. So I think it's super important. I do not think they should be penalized for a teacher strike.
Thank you for the phone call, John. Beth, you're on WGN. Hi, Beth.
Hi, John. I've heard your voice a lot. You've never heard mine, but this is what struck me this morning. Those children rely on the routine of that day. They might go to other places after school. They have lunch there. They might have had someone else's hat to give back. I mean, it's just a shame. Let's grow up, teachers. Did you get into it for the money?
Thank you for the phone call. Wally, you're on WGN. Hi, Wally.
Hi, Don. How are you? I just agree with that first lady. You know, if you're going to let the coaches coach and you're going to pay them the stipend or whatever, you know, the debate team, you know, has to prepare for their competitions. You know, the science fair, you know, that's a state science fair. You know, like she said, the band and the cheerleaders. You know, if all those people are just going to be getting all of their, just going in and doing all of their part-time work, they're still going to be getting paid, and they're not going to be in a classroom. They're just going to be doing all of their side gigs.
Well, they would be doing that during the school year anyway, right? I mean, if they can do it during the school year, they certainly have time to do this when they're on strike.
Right, but you're saying the coaches should, you know, they should find the money to pay the coaches. Well, they should find the money to pay the teachers for the debate team, too.
And
band, and chorus, and math, and science.
You know, you guys are right about that. That's a good point. Thank you for the phone call. I mean, I was literally thinking about the football team. But when you think about all of the fall activities that kids are involved in, that's going to be a lot more teachers getting paid, a lot more stipends for a lot more stuff. I'm still on board. I'll bet you that as a function of the, you know, as a percentage of the school budget, it's still very, very small. I'll bet you there are some teachers out there who have worked with these kids just as long, right, as long as the kids have been at it. And they'd probably prefer to go to the game or the meet or the match or whatever, the concert, than stand there with a picket sign. Teachers stand there with picket signs.
Part of the point of a strike is to inflict pain.
On whom?
On everyone. On the you know, to inflict pain on the kids and the parents in a way that pressures the board. I mean, to inflict pain on the board, to effort some sort of change. So if you start taking steps to ease that pain, you know, it's not. I don't think it's in the union's interest to do that.
Yeah. I'd like to not think about it that way.
And Steve, I was in speech competition, and yeah. I'm sorry that you favor the football players.
So I figure, sure, the teachers will go on strike, and we'll all get mad at Janice Jackson or Lori Lightfoot or whatever. I didn't think that the kids were being used as a sort of pawn in that game. If you inflict pain on the families, they'll pressure the school district to give the teachers what they want.
You don't think the kids are being used?
The
Park District nearly went on strike yesterday, and on the very day today, I should say.
Yeah, right.
That they would have been needed to watch over the kids.
Yeah, what a coinkydink. No, I get your point. Listen, all I want to say is if I get to be king, I would find a way to let the kids. You do have sympathy for the students, right? You do have sympathy for the students and the families who have practiced their. You're right. My nephew has marched in a parking lot playing a horn, you know, so that someday he could march in a football game. He wouldn't get to do that either. What a shame for that kid, right? I mean, you do feel for the kids, Steve, right?
I feel for the kids, but I think maybe we make it sound more, or we create more importance around it than it deserves. You know, I'm 56 years old now. If I had missed 10 basketball games 35 years ago, I don't think it would have a big impact on me right now.
Yeah, well, what would you have said your sophomore or junior year about
it? I would have been bummed about it, but then I would have gotten over it.
As a parent of somebody whose kid played sports, I would still be bummed about it. Yeah, maybe the kids are like fine, but it's like, hey, it's my son or daughter's last year to play lacrosse. We've been, do you know what a lacrosse stick costs? Come on, man.
Nothing compared to the camps.
Come on, man. Bill, you're on W. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, good Lord, heaven forbid if you actually sent your kid to a camp or got a private coach to help them. Bill, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? You're on the air. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Yeah, listen, I think that the teachers are kind of all wet on this. I think the kids are getting screwed. But I think also, too, the smokescreen of having all these, needing all these counselors and aides to help them is just a smokescreen for more money. If you offered the teachers $150,000 a year, you wouldn't be hearing anything about the nurses and the counselors and all the support staff that they're demanding and the class size. So I think the teachers are just putting a con job on you at the expense of the kids and the parents.
Thank you for the phone call. I'll go from Bill on line 3 to Ginger on line 4. Hi, Ginger. You're on the air.
Hi, Jen. I'm a 33-year teacher veteran, retired, and it upsets me that what people are hitting on is the salary. When I started teaching, I got $12,000 a year. As I progressed through the years and paid my money for classes and I would spend $6,000 to $8,000 a year on classroom supplies. This strike is not just about teacher money. It's on class size. What? It's to help the kids more.
What's the matter, Steve?
Well, can you tell me, because that's a lot of money, can you tell me where that $8,000 went?
To math manipulatives, to movies, to books, library books, to furniture, so the kids had a nice library area to read. To a carpet, so they had a carpet to lay on.
So you're buying them carpet and couches?
Well, I didn't buy a couch. It was, a chair.
Okay.
But
how much money did you say you spent in a given year on your classroom?
$8,000.
Well,
that's the honest to God truth.
I don't doubt you.
That's
too much.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe playground equipment.
I have to, teachers get moved around, and you create a program that works. And if you have to move from school to school, you don't have all the manipulatives you need. You don't have all the flashcards that you need. You don't have all of the learning tools that you need at that other school. So, I'm sick and tired of, and I was a gym teacher at one time in the elementary level. And I had soccer fields set up for the kids. I mean, I understood soccer was the rage of everything. But the thing is that you're giving more respect to the athlete than you are the teacher. You're saying the teacher's not worth it, but the athlete is. Now, if there wasn't a teacher, you got to thank God that you can read because a teacher taught you that.
Wait a minute. Hold on one second. I'm going to go to another call here, Ginger, but about the students playing their games or the band playing the instruments, you think that the kids should not be doing those activities during a strike, right?
They can't because of IHSA rules.
Yeah, I understand that.
Can I ask one quick question,
they
too?
Get to make their own rules. Go ahead, Steve.
Ginger, when did you retire? How old were you when you retired?
I was in my 60s.
Okay.
Now, what was your point, Steve?
Well, because I think
a lot of them retire in their 50s.
I feel that way. I could be wrong about that.
Ginger, thanks for the phone call. Diana, you're on WGN. Hi, Diana. What do you want to say?
My head's about to explode with this.
I'm sorry.
I worked in union jobs my whole life. I'm now retired. I was not a teacher. I was in the airline industry. However, kids today need to understand that it isn't all about money. They need to understand that quality of life is very, very important. These teachers, they rejected a contract with a 16% pay raise, if I'm not correct.
That's right.
And if I'm correct.
You are.
And they, and what they're trying to do is to make their lives more manageable in the classroom. They're trying to make the lives and the teaching experience for the kids better by less size of the classrooms and having the resources available for those students. It's very difficult, and I was in negotiations in the airline industry, part of that. It's very difficult when these contracts are negotiated in the public eye. And people are looking, they did it the same thing, I was a flight attendant. They would do the same thing to us and say, oh, but look how much you're making and you only work 3 or 4 days a week. They don't realize the same thing with teachers, how much time you put in outside of that classroom, how much money is put in. And if you're so exhausted and spent by having more children than you can possibly handle, then the job is not worth having.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing from a lot of them. All right, Diana, thank you for the phone call. And we asked Janice Jackson about that. She said, first of all, the union in your head's going to explode maybe even more. I'm just recollecting what she told us about an hour ago here on WGN. The CEO of the Chicago Public Schools was on for the second day in a row. She said this notion that we have a lot of schools with 48 kids in the classroom is just not true, A. And B, she said, we said that if there's more than 38 students in a classroom, we put in writing that we'll give them a teacher's aide. Some of you hear that and say, boy, that's a Band-Aid. That's still not enough. That's where they are right now. Time for maybe one or two more calls. Sue, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for holding. Sue, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
Yes, I just wanted to mention that about the athletes and the band members. But the band members and dance teams and those people who want to go into college can audition. But if you're a student athlete, and my daughter played lacrosse in college, if she missed her junior game, that could have cost her her scholarship.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't have gone to college, and she wouldn't be a teacher now. So sports is a little bit different than the other fields. Because the only way you get those scholarships and noticed by colleges is through playing your high school games and playing your club games.
Interesting point. Thanks for the phone call. That's Sue on line one, and this is Ron. You're on WGN. Hi, Ron. What do you want to say?
Hey, how are you? My Good. Daughter is a 15-year-old teacher and principal in the past. She basically works in low-income suburban public schools and is in the union. She makes about half the money of a 10-year Chicago teacher, although she has even more experience. She has large class sizes, some that are 30 children or more, and she works approximately 70 or more hours a week between homework, planning, new things to come up, you know, have to go to classes to keep up your educational standings. They have more problems also in the school today with kids, just in general, things that they didn't diagnose in my generation. I'm in my mid-60s.
Yeah.
But, you know, and in those days, you know, you could get whacked by a teacher or, you know, punished or something else, or kicked out of school.
Are you telling me, Ron, she would take, are you telling me she would take this CPS deal in a heartbeat?
Well, no, not just that. I mean, the CPS deal, I understand. She doesn't have and needs. She has large class sizes, too, and they don't get the attention. And first of all, everybody says, you know, I heard one woman comment say, well, you're not in it for, you know, you're a teacher. You're not in it for the money. Everybody works for the money. If you don't have enough money to live on, you know, and it isn't worth it, you're gonna go do something else.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. I mean, come on. I'm not denying them the amount of money that they can get. If it's $100,000 and we can afford it, more power to them. Listen, the CTU is expected to join us in the next half hour. We heard from the CPS earlier.
We will rock you.
Huh. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 2:37.
Buddy, you're a young man.
After the news at 2:30, Olive's always got a song on her mind. Sometimes I can guess why. Yesterday it was Madonna because she's keeping the parents up until after 10:30. But why are you playing Queen?
Well, because I love Queen. No, I'm joking. Because President Trump posted a video on Twitter featuring this song, and Queen has forced him to take it down.
That happens all the time with politicians, and this president particularly. You know, he's on one side, and a lot of the musicians are on the other. You'd think they would stop going down that road, you know? You know, I was also thinking about, too, was how nice this weather is. I mean, maybe there's a little rain in the forecast or a chance of it in a few days, but by and large, it's been pretty nice. How fun would it be if we were playing Chicago Cubs baseball right now? How fun would it be if the Cubs were in the playoff right
Not
now?
Not as fun as if it was the White Sox.
I'm like, oh, man, Brenda and I were walking around yesterday, and I thought, we were just kind of talking about how pleasant it was. Wouldn't it be fun to be hanging around Wrigley? Yeah, sure, or the South Side, but lucky the teams that are still in the hunt. So we're instead talking about the CTU and the CPS. A little while ago, Janice Jackson from the Chicago Public Schools was on. She sort of gave her position. We even played some of the CTU's commercials so she could give her side of some of the points that they were making. But better that we actually talk to somebody from the teachers' union. The communications director there is Chris Giovannis. Chris is on line 7. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Are you at all on the negotiating team, or do you just stay in touch with the people doing the negotiating?
So I'm only intermittently in bargaining for the most part. It's our officers, our legal representatives, and over 40 rank and file members. These are teaching assistants, school nurses, social workers, school counselors, obviously teachers, English language teachers, special education teachers. We really have a bargaining team that represents every single group of our members. And all of the needs that our students experience.
I wondered, we were talking to Janice about how physically you all do it. She was talking a little bit about that. I wonder if because there's so many people and so many interests, these things become unwieldy. One of the reasons it takes a while to get a deal done is because you've got so many people talking about so many things.
Well, first of all, I routinely attend the caucus sessions with our bargaining members, our rank-and-file bargaining members, and I find them to be an extremely unified and extremely focused group. And we do have demands on the table that are designed to address the myriad of problems in CPS schools. I recognize that CPS doesn't necessarily want to deal with any of those issues. They certainly don't really want to seem to put the language in the contract that really solves those problems. But I find it ironic that they're using democracy and transparency as an excuse not to move, when really, as far as we can tell, it's because they don't want to move in terms of making real commitments that are actually enforceable so we can protect our students.
What's the biggest roadblock right now?
Well, there are a series of roadblocks. We're still trying to get to an agreement to raise the wage floor for our lowest wage workers, our paraprofessionals, the teaching assistants and school clerks, and other frontline workers who really are the backbone of our school communities. One of our members on the bargaining team, Willie Cousins, has been a teaching assistant at Bond in Englewood, where he also lives for 5 years, and he makes barely $28,000 a year. That's not enough to support a family. His wife is working a number of jobs. He is working a second job at Walmart. You know, we've got to do better for these workers. We couldn't run our schools without them. We literally could not run our classrooms without them. And yet, at the end of the 5 years of the contract that the mayor has on the table, these workers would still be making wages so low, their kids would be eligible for free and reduced lunch under federal poverty guidelines. Over 1,100 of them today literally cannot afford a two-bedroom apartment in any zip code in the city based on prevailing rent rates. We've got to do better for those workers. But this is much more than a debate about wages. This is really a debate about the quality of learning conditions in our schools, about exploding class sizes, about a dire shortage of school nurses and social workers.
Chris, I'm going to play for you. Hold on. I'm going to play for you, if I may, because you're now starting to touch on some of the points that Janice talked to us just moments ago about. So if you don't mind, You just
not
brought
at
up,
all.
You, well, you brought up the class sizes, and this is Ellicott 1. This is what Janice Jackson said about the district's commitment to smaller class sizes.
If you live in a community that happens to have 38 first graders or some number like that, we can't just tell those eight students over that number, you can't attend this school. What we have offered in writing is to make sure that we provide a teacher's assistant in that classroom in cases where that has happened.
What would you say to that?
Well, it would be great if it would happen, and it would happen quickly, but we have kindergarten classes with upwards of 40 kids right now who still haven't had a teaching assistant assigned. And I think it's terrible that they're suggesting that really we ought to stop caring about those overcrowded classrooms once you hit third grade. They have agreed at the table to basically, instead of providing a teaching assistant when a class tops out at 32 kids, for not just kindergarten, first, and second grade, but also for third graders. And they don't get those teaching assistants into those classes now for kindergarten, first, and second grade in a timely manner. We expect to have some overcrowded classrooms that still won't have a teaching assistant after the first of the year. And it means that every single other student in a classroom above grade three, if we were to agree to this, is still stuck in overcrowded classrooms. What that means for the kids at Simeon, where virtually every core class is overcrowded, is that you can expect upwards of 40 kids in a social studies class, a world language class, a math class. That's not fair to those students. And at many of these schools, these overcrowding problems have been chronic. At a school like Wentworth on the South Side, Gresham, Grissom, Ash, these are not new problems. These are problems that have persisted for years. I go to the school board meetings every month, and every month, parents from these school communities come and beg CPS to do something about this. I've been listening to them for 2 years, and nothing has changed. That's why we want guaranteed enforceable caps on classrooms. We want to create a disincentive for CPS to keep packing kids in like sardines and denying them the individual attention that they deserve from their teachers.
Let me ask you this.
CPS can afford this, and they ought to do the right thing.
You know, and I know that if you and I get into a conversation about their position and your position on the money, I don't think we'll meet in the middle. But one of the things I asked, well, just because I know that the two of you regard the money differently, but I just wanted to ask you one question that came up at the very end of our conversation with Janice Jackson, and that was, have they asked the teachers to take less if the money that the teachers would give up would go to some of these positions we're talking about? What's your thought about that?
So I'm not at the table. I would say that any reasonable proposal is worthy of discussion. And for elementary and high school teachers who are at least making enough to put a roof over their heads, that's a discussion that ought to be had. For our lowest wage workers, we want them to have a living wage, not a poverty wage. And this is not just about the money for elementary and high school teachers. This is about the learning conditions of our students and the working conditions for our members. If you are teaching 40 kids in a split grade class, as some of our teachers are, you know, 15 third graders, you know, another 25, 30 fourth graders, you're teaching two classes, two curriculums, two sets of lesson plans, and none of those students are getting the attention that they deserve. And I got to tell you, CPS's argument about the cost really falls flat. They just passed a $7.7 billion budget. The offer that the mayor put on the table for salary increases is literally less than 1% of that budget. I can't believe that they can't find some wiggle room in there to actually adequately staff our schools, get our students the trauma supports that they need, and actually make sure the kids have enough boots on the ground to protect them, keep them safe, and educate them.
Here is another cut from Janice Jackson. Now, if this is cut two, it's talking about enrollment again.
We've also put in writing that we would work with our principals to make sure that they are not over-enrolling those schools and classrooms with students who don't reside in those boundaries.
Is that valuable to you?
As I said, everything is on the table that's a reasonable proposal. We have been ready to bargain and bargain seriously and try to come to middle ground that works for educators and, most importantly, works for students.
Well, but they
I got to tell you, we know that there are some schools on the north side, when they are over-enrolled, they actually get the capital funding from CPS to build an extension or even build a new school. The problem with that approach is that for schools that are chronically overcrowded on the south side, and this has been reported by news outlets like WBEZ, those black and brown majority schools on the south side and the west side never get the same kind of consideration in terms of actually expanding their physical capacity. We've got to end the separate and unequal approach to funding schools and supporting students that we have today in the city. And every school is under-resourced in the city, and CPS has an infusion of annual cash of upwards of $1 billion that is supposed to be used by the district to remedy exactly those conditions.
Janice Jackson took exception with that. She then clicked off a litany of places that that money is being spent, and she says that's a red herring. But don't respond to that. Respond to this. This is Cut 3, Elif. This is Janice Jackson on earlier today.
We put in writing what we think are solutions to this, and we're just waiting for a response that we don't get through the media, that we don't get through commercials, that we actually get in writing back from the union that is very different than the proposal, the only official proposal that we have on the table, which is what they gave us back in January.
That was surprising to me.
That's actually not true. This is the kind of disconnect that really baffles me. Is it that there isn't enough of a solid, honest exchange going on between the mayor's bargaining team and the mayor and the CEO of CPS? Because I find that absolutely astounding. And it is simply false. As late as Saturday, we presented another set of counterproposals that are designed to provide a framework to get to equity for every school while prioritizing the schools most in need. And I find it ironic that they have claimed that we are bargaining in public when, in fact, they didn't release their first salary offer to us. They released it to the press and the fact finder.
They have consistently
done that as late as Friday when they gave us their last best final offer, which included $400,000 to get four more nurses or four more social workers or four more counselors, or four more case managers, when we have only 113 school nurses today for over 500 schools. That's an insult to our members, and it's a slap in the face to our students.
I'm out of time, Chris, but would you say, how are things going, Chris? Are we making progress today? Are you optimistic?
What I'm hearing from the table is that there has been some movement. What we need is for the fifth floor to actually allow that movement to become real, to allow both bargaining teams to land language that we can take back to our rank and file that is going to meaningfully improve conditions in our schools. It's going to give us the equity and educational justice that the mayor promised as a candidate. That's all we're asking for. If it's good enough to put in writing for Lincoln Yards, for a $1.3 billion handout to a rich developer to build a new neighborhood for rich people, if it's good enough to put it in writing in a contract with Aramark, which underserves our schools and leaves them dirty and roach and rat infested, then it ought to be good enough to put it in writing for our students and the educators who serve them.
Well, the teachers will give a little at the bargaining table still.
Look, we understand how to negotiate. It sometimes is a question about whether or not the mayor understands what negotiating is. It's hard to say, you know. I understand that she comes from a background as a prosecutor where you're used to going hard to the wall and letting the judge decide. That's not how real negotiating works. We want to negotiate a fair deal. We're not interested in bankrupting CPS. We're interested in equity for our students. We are not unreasonable people. We work our tails off every day for our students and our schools and the families that rely on us.
Chris Giovannis.
We're asking for that consideration from CTS.
As the communications director at CTU. Get back to the table. Good luck to you. I appreciate your time, Chris.
Thank you, Ab. Really appreciate it.
So there's both sides on the show today. Sarah Tiemann is a colleague of mine. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
You're in the what department?
Marketing.
So we are doing tomorrow an interview with the doctor that fixed my detached retina.
Yes, on Facebook Live.
Facebook Live tomorrow. So on the radio tomorrow.
Correct.
After the 2 o'clock news at 2:10, Dr. Fauci, Amani Fauci is going to be in. So if you know somebody with eye issues, eye problems,
yep,
detached retina, or anything else, this is a chance for you to call in. It's something we're doing in conjunction with our friends, right?
With Northwestern Medicine.
And they are great people there. I'm so helpful or happy to have found them myself. She's going to be in the studio. We'll talk about what I went through,
yep,
what our listeners are going through, and it'll be live. You can watch the conversation as well.
Correct. Yeah, you'll be able to listen and watch on Facebook Live and comment in with your questions on Facebook Live.
That's tomorrow, a little after 2 o'clock. Join us then.